Okay, great. I've got it now. So coming up next, oh man, such a treat to have this woman here. Only, I think, her third time, but the first two were just real, real stunners. And I wish you'd come do this show more. She is a teacher at National Lewis University specializing in first generation college students, right? Which is super awesome. She's a really great essayist and improviser and comedian in her own right. Please welcome Margot Tumeltas.
So I get to start out with this wonderful piece by Iman Y. It doesn't tell me what grade or age she is, but it's obvious she's wiser than her years, most definitely, whatever those years may be. Dairy, I give you permission. Wreck my stomach, so long as I can have the pleasure of pulling apart your stringy mozzarella sticks. I prefer not to have you in your weakened, limp, room temperature state, but I will still nurture you and pull you apart with care. I will tentatively bite into the waxy skin of your round, full, brie figure, always temporarily forgetting if it's edible. I will resign myself to amazement every time I discover your simultaneously sweet and salty character. I will drink your calcium-rich nectar, known as milk by common folk, hoping to find my strength in its nutritional value. You only have one serious flaw that I think you are very well aware of. You sit in the hands of Jamie Lee Curtis, telling the world how good you are for digestive systems, or let Bobby Flay get you to the Greek and use you as a substitute in cooking? No! I see right through you to your tartness and tang, and I almost hate you for letting yourself regress to a yogurt form. You're so much better than that. Don't let the world manipulate you. You're cultured enough without bacterial fermentation. Oh, dairy. You always trick me into thinking you're good for me, but I end up sick and gassy in the end. I think you're worth it. This is the first part of a much longer piece. One day I'll have a solid 20 minutes somewhere of my own, and I'll tell the whole thing together, but here's part one. It's called The Mirage. It's barely 9, but already the sun is unrelenting. I'm watching two officers in County Green walk up the road through Camp Justice. When I first saw them, I was sitting on the outskirts behind our tent. I could easily have run away. But they look like a shimmering mirage in this heat, and they can't possibly be coming for me. So I just stand there and watch the mirage get closer. The landscape is right. The desert, an hour outside Las Vegas. Wide stretches of sun-bleached blue sky. Snow-capped mountains at every horizon. It's beautiful. Except for the blind-faced gray Reaper drones rising silent into the sky with remarkable regularity. The Nevada desert looks hauntingly like Afghanistan or Pakistan where these drones fly. Bombs controlled here, dropped on presumed enemies, often civilians, often children, on the other side of the world. The lie is that this is precise, a surgery instead of a tragedy. The lie is that such distance diminishes the guilt somehow, as if these thousands of miles between the pilots and their blurry targets keep our warriors safe. Their PTSD, addiction, suicide say otherwise. Along the highway near the base, beneath a shadeless expanse of sky, signs read, prison area, do not pick up hitchhikers. It's a bizarre convergence of pure Americana, a few acres of desert where a federal prison, a wild horse preserve, and Creech Air Force Base all meet here on the outskirts of Sin City. This morning, we disrupted traffic into base. We've been holding vigils during rush hour, but today we blocked the highway. They arrested my mother, but not me. and I cried, screaming, "I love you, Mom! I'm proud of you!" as she was handcuffed and loaded into a small white cage on the back of the truck. But they didn't arrest me. I wasn't in the highway, only standing by the side of the road with a heart-shaped sign reading, "Muslim Lives Matter." The road was blocked by my mom and a couple of others willing to put their bodies on the line. It was my mom who'd been willing to risk arrest, not me. But in the dangerous, electric moment, I can't leave her. A semi swerves past her and she raises her voice to be heard above the cursing and screeching. "Mom!" I scream, but she doesn't hear me or won't reply. A woman in fatigues driving an SUV has pulled onto the shoulder to get around us. I'm standing on the shoulder, holding my heart-shaped sign. I should get out of the way, maybe, but I can't. I can't. It's insane. These people are enraged by their interrupted commute, but not by the children dying on their watch. The night before, I'd seen the documentary National Bird. The screening is held in a church, the film introduced by two drone whistleblowers. On the screen, beneath a cross, a mother describes watching her children die while their brother listens, both legs missing. Hospital files brim with these accidental amputees. The whistleblowers hunch in their pew as if praying for forgiveness. Alex was a drone pilot whose finger used to press that final trigger. He is cocky and tough, a bulldog in black. He tells me, matter-of-factly, that he has nightmares every night. Sean was a drone engineer. His hands helped build this technology. In the church, these hands stay folded quietly in his lap, but his whole body quakes, does not stop quaking. When Sean was discharged, they gave him a document of his successful missions, 200 kills. They won't tell him how many were civilians. He has tried to find out. He shakes so much, I want to wrap my arms around him and soak his pain up like a sponge. Share this burden with him. The next morning, beside the highway, this woman's SUV pointed at me. Instead of turning around as others have done, she drives towards me. "Muslim lives matter," my sign says, but from the way she is driving straight at me, I doubt my life matters to her either. The truck touches my thighs. It's crazy for me to stay here, stupid, but those are thoughts, afterthoughts. Here is no thinking, just the feel of the truck pressing into my legs and my desperation to stop her, maybe to save her from becoming haunted as Alex and Sean are haunted. She doesn't care that I'm trying to save her soul. She is late for work and I am in the way. She presses forward and I imagine my legs cracking in half. Then I think of children kneeling in the dust, the unjust asymmetry of their missing limbs, and it seems only fair to risk mine. I am no more innocent, no more deserving of a body that can dance. I feel the woman ease off her brake and roll into my thighs, and it is only the survival animal in me that shoves me out of the way. When the officers appear at camp an hour later, I could hide in our tent or disappear into the desert. Instead, I walk towards them. Why? My mother's an activist. I was raised with a healthy distrust of the police. But just the day before, during an afternoon vigil, a young officer had approached me to untie my banner from a highway sign. I bristled immediately, but as I slowly untied the banner, we wound up in good conversation. I explained that my distrust of the police was rational, living in the city where the police assassinated Fred Hampton. He told me his priority was keeping people safe. How? I asked. By keeping drunk drivers off the road, he said. It was his last day of work before getting married. They were going to Greece for their honeymoon. I said, "Greece is magnificent. More stars in the night sky than you've ever seen." I decide that the next time I encounter an officer, I will begin by assuming the best. Give them a chance to be human. So the next day, when Officer Marlowe says he's not here to arrest me, I take him at his word. He was worried about me, he says, how upset I was when they arrested my mom. And since she's been so well behaved, he would let me see her. My mother is such an activist diva, I can believe for one wild moment that I am a warrior princess, and these armed, unsmiling men did so honor my mother, the queen, that they were taking me to see her, a prisoner in their white cage. The officers march me through camp. Fellow activists stand as we pass, but I smile and wave them off. It's okay. Be back soon. We cross the highway and enter the base, walk another 5 minutes in the sun. We talk about breakfast. Marlowe asks if I've eaten yet. I haven't. These vigils start before dawn, rush hour into base. Marlowe eats a hearty breakfast every day, eggs and sausage, wheat toast and a smoothie. I tell him I don't eat breakfast, only coffee before I run to work. I'm a teacher. We are still outdoors, blue sky, mountains, sun beating down. I'm probably still smiling, excited to see my mother and to get this sneak peek of the base. My heart warmed by this officer, Marlowe, behaving like a human being. We turn a corner and suddenly I am closed off, surrounded by khaki walls as guns close into a circle around me. My bag is taken from my shoulders and my hands are shackled to a chain around my waist. We are taking you to your mother, Marlowe says, but first we are arresting you. Part one.
Who wants to give Margot a full 20 minutes sometimes so we can get all of that? Good Lord. That was great. Oh, man. Super intense. I assume at some point you got unarrested. So I'm glad you're here. Thank you for sharing that.